You're standing in the middle of your kitchen. The sun is streaming through the window, and everything feels perfectly normal. But I want you to take a second and imagine that suddenly, it isn't. Maybe the sky turns an angry shade of green, or the ground starts to shudder, or a siren begins to wail from the fire station down the road. In those first few seconds, your heart starts to race, and your mind goes into a dozen different directions at once. You start wondering where your spouse is, if the kids are safe at school, and what path you should take if you have to leave the house right now. That feeling of frantic uncertainty is exactly what we are going to fix today. I've spent years working with my hands, fixing pipes and wiring circuits. And if there is one thing I've learned, it's that you don't wait for the leak to start before you learn where the main water shutoff valve is located. A family emergency plan is no different than a good set of blueprints. It's the foundation that keeps the structure standing when the wind starts to howl. I'll be the first to admit that I wasn't always this prepared. There was a summer years ago when a massive thunderstorm rolled through our county much faster than the local news predicted. I was out in the garage, tinkering with an old lawnmower engine, and by the time I realized the wind had picked up to a dangerous level, the power had already flickered out, and the sky was pitch black. I realized in that moment that I didn't actually know which neighbor had the reinforced storm cellar, and my wife was on her way home from work with no idea which roads were already starting to flood. I spent 45 minutes pacing the hallway, trying to get a cell signal that wouldn't connect, feeling completely helpless because we had never sat down to talk about what to do if we couldn't talk to each other. That feeling of being blind in a storm stayed with me. It taught me that a plan isn't about being paranoid. It's about being the person who knows exactly what the next move is, while everyone else is still trying to figure out what happened. We start this process by looking at the walls around us and identifying the spots where we meet when things go south. You might think it's obvious to just meet at home, but we have to account for the times when home isn't an option. I like to think of this in three distinct circles. The first circle is right inside the house, a specific room or a sturdy hallway away from windows where we gather for immediate threats like high winds. The second circle is just outside, maybe a specific tree in the front yard or the neighbor's mailbox, for situations where we need to get out of the house quickly, like a fire. The third circle is the one people often forget, and that's a spot outside of your immediate neighborhood. If a gas leak or a local evacuation cordons off your entire block, you need a landmark everyone knows, like a specific library or a grocery store parking lot a few miles away. When we pick these spots, we aren't just naming them. We are walking to them, looking at them, and making sure every person in the house, from the smallest child to the oldest adult, can find them without needing a map or a phone. Communication is the next layer of this build, and it's usually the first thing to fail in a real crisis. We rely so heavily on our digital devices that we've forgotten what it's like to not have them. I want you to think about a person you trust who lives at least two states away. This is your out-of-area contact, when local cell towers are overloaded because everyone in town is trying to call their loved ones at once. A long-distance text or call can often get through when a local one won't. I make sure everyone in my family has this person's number memorized. We treat it like a primary tool in the kit. If we get separated, we all call that one person to report that we are safe. It turns that distant friend into a central switchboard for our family. You might be thinking that you have all your numbers saved in your contacts, but if your phone dies or gets dropped in a puddle, that information is gone. We write these numbers down on physical cards, laminate them with a bit of clear tape, and tuck them into backpacks and wallets. It's a low-tech solution for a high-tech failure, and it works every single time. Once we have our meeting places and our contacts settled, we have to look at the logistics of moving. If I told you right now that you had 5 minutes to leave your home and you might not be back for 3 days, what would you grab? Most people would spend 4 of those minutes searching for their shoes, and the other minute grabbing things they don't actually need. We prepare for this by having a go bag for every person in the house. This isn't a massive hiking pack filled with survivalist gear you don't know how to use. It's a simple backpack with a change of clothes, a few bottles of water, some non-perishable snacks, and copies of important documents like insurance papers and identification. I always keep a small flashlight and a backup power bank for my phone in mind. When I pack these, I think about the weight. A bag is no good if it's so heavy you can't carry it for a mile. We keep these bags in a spot that's easy to reach on the way out the door, usually the coat closet or near the garage entry. It's about reducing the friction between the moment you realize you need to leave and the moment your feet hit the pavement. We also have to consider the house itself. Part of a family plan is making sure everyone knows how to handle the utilities. I've seen plenty of folks who can fix a leaky faucet, but have no idea how to shut off the main gas line or where the electrical breaker panel is hidden. We take the time to walk through the house together and point these things out. I'll show you exactly how to use a wrench to turn that gas valve 90 degrees so it's perpendicular to the pipe, which stops the flow. We talk about why we don't turn it back on ourselves and why we wait for the professionals to do that part. We look at the water main and the electrical shutoff. If there's a major leak or a risk of fire, knowing how to kill the power or the water in 10 seconds can save the entire structure. It's about giving every member of the family the agency to act. We don't want anyone standing around waiting for permission when the basement is flooding or the smell of gas is getting stronger. Information is just as important as physical gear. We need to know the risks that are specific to where we live. If you're in a low-lying area, you're thinking about water. If you're out in the plains, you're thinking about wind. We make sure we have a way to get news that doesn't depend on the internet. A simple battery-powered or hand-crank weather radio is one of the best investments you can make. It's a sturdy, reliable piece of equipment that brings in the voice of the National Weather Service, even when the power lines are down and the cell towers are silent. I remember the first time I turned mine on during a heavy storm. The static cleared away, and a calm, steady voice started giving coordinates for the heavy rain. It felt like someone had handed me a flashlight in a dark cave. We keep fresh batteries taped to the side of the radio, so we aren't hunting through junk drawers when the lights go out. The most critical part of this entire plan, the part that makes it more than just a piece of paper, is the practice. You can have the best blueprints in the world, but if you never pick up a hammer, you'll never have a house. We run through our plan at least twice a year. We don't make it a scary, high-stress event. We treat it like a fire drill at school. We pick a Saturday morning. I'll announce that we are practicing our exit, and we all move to our outdoor meeting spot. We check our bags to make sure the clothes still fit the kids and the crackers haven't expired. We call our out-of-area contact just to say hello and remind them they are our designated person. This repetition builds muscle memory. When you practice while you're calm, your body will know what to do when you're stressed. You won't have to think about which way to turn or where to go. You'll just do it because you've done it a dozen times before. I'll tell you why we go to all this trouble. It's because the middle of a disaster is a terrible time to start a conversation. When the wind is rattling the siding and the rain is drumming on the roof, you want to be able to look at your family and see that they are calm because they know the plan. You want to feel that steady confidence that comes from preparation. It's the same feeling you get when you finish a big repair job and you turn the power back on, and everything hums to life exactly the way it should. We are building a safety net, one cord at a time, so that no matter what happens outside those four walls, the people inside are ready. Once you've walked the perimeter and identified your spots, and once you've written down those numbers and packed those bags, you'll notice a change in how you feel when the weather report turns sour. That tightness in your chest starts to ease up. You aren't reacting anymore, you're executing a plan. You've moved from being a spectator to being the foreman of your own home's safety. We take care of the people we love by making sure they aren't left guessing in the dark. It's the most important DIY project you'll ever take on, and it doesn't require a single power tool, just a bit of your time and a commitment to looking out for one another. When the work is done and the plan is set, you can go back to enjoying that sunlight through the kitchen window, knowing that if the shadows ever grow long, you and yours are going to be just fine.